Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. Ho, 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 it is Christmas time.
Damn.
Yeah.
You can't tell, but we're decked out in, like, holiday hats.
We're all wearing...
is in the house.
We're all wearing flowing white beards and red Santa suits.
I'm actually dressed as that dude from A Christmas Carol, the dude with the cornucopia of food and stuff like that.
Stuff in the cornucopia?
Yep. The horn of plenty.
Yes. Anyway, it is Christmas time, and so... Or the holiday of your choice.
Yep.
And so we will be, having some modified hours the next couple weeks.
Yep.
Wanted to give people a heads up. So next Thursday is December 24th. That is Christmas Eve.
That's good. I've already forgotten this. So this is informing me too.
We will be closing at 7 p.m. I'll inform Dave of this again about five more times because he's asked me many times. And then we are closed on Friday, December 25th for Christmas. Then the next week, same deal. Thursday, New Year's Eve. We will be closing at 7. Friday, New Year's Day, will be closed all day. But we will be here up till 7 for your last-minute gifting needs and your last-minute game needs for New Year's.
Indeed.
And then we have stuff coming up in January. So on Tuesday, January 12th, we will be doing the return of our Reading with Rogues. Mm-hmm. We are starting off big. We're going to be at Tsushinini. And we are starting off big with Star Wars Volume 1, which we all love, and I'm super excited to get back and reread. Cause,
it seems mildly timely. Even.
Yeah. It's almost like there's a big movie coming out later this week.
It's almost like there's so much merchandising that there's official Star Wars oranges.
There are Star Wars oranges, and I am okay with this.
Do they have like the DNA of Lucas in them or something?
No. I think
they're just probably branded with Star Wars.
If you eat them, they turn you into BB-8.
Neat!
On Wednesday, January 13th is our Ladies' Night at Palermo. On Monday, January 18th is the return of our Gaming with Rogues. It's going to be at Lamppost Coffee. And they're playing Machikoro, one of my favorite games.
Nice.
One last thing about Christmas time. We are closing in on the last time to get any kind of special orders in. We will have a reorder coming in on the 23rd, the day before Christmas Eve. Yep. However, there's always the chance that stuff might ship late. UPS is really overstuffed right now, so we can't guarantee comic stuff that is ordered after this point.
Right.
So if you want something specific, we have a lot of stuff, but we can't guarantee a special order. We're absolutely willing to give it a shot.
We will do the best we can.
We will give it a shot.
And I would say that, like, there's a generally pretty good success rate on
90% chance it'll get here.
Yes.
But every so often something like, for instance, this week we have a Batmobile on order that would be coming with our Wednesday order this week. It is coming in either Thursday or not at all.
Yeah.
And we won't know that for sure until, like, Wednesday.
Yep. Now, actually... as it happens, I think for that guy, that's okay. He was holding out for paycheck or something like that. So he's probably fine.
Yeah, it works. I mean, we already have one. We're waiting. It was an extra one to restock. But I'm just saying, occasionally that kind of thing happens.
Yep.
And again, might be fine because then it would come in that Thursday of actual Christmas Eve.
Yep.
But we're at that drop dead point. However, for game stuff, we have two more orders going in before Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have anything game-wise that you want a special order, we do that. That's local. There's no UPS involved, really. As long as it's in stock, we can order stuff. So there is still time if you need something special for games.
That's right.
And we want to pitch something that we talked about a little bit last week. We got our stock of Red Flags, the game of bad dates.
Yep.
That game and its expansion Dark Red Flags,
it's
which is
a naughty expansion.
Definitely naughty. Some of the cards in there are very naughty.
Yep.
Also, if you're going to be having friends over or parties during this time, Red Flags is a ton of fun. We laughed our way through it when playing it. Super Fight is a ton of fun. And if you're all adults, Cards Against Humanity is a ton of fun.
Yep.
And we are stocked up on all that stuff. All right. So moving on from store stuff to news, there's a lot of news this week.
Go on.
There were three trailers.
Right.
And let's hit them in order. Let's start with X-Men Apocalypse.
Okay, right. What all happened in that? I didn't rewatch it right before
Apocalypse.
This.
Apocalypse shows up.
Let's see.
Jean Grey has a vision of the future.
Right. We saw, I remember seeing Archangel in there.
I get the sense that Storm might be one of his horsemen.
Yeah, she is. Well, they showed, he said he always travels with like four horsemen.
Yeah.
And then they showed Storm, Jubilee, Nightcrawler?
No, Storm, Archangel, It was Nightcrawler, but I think Jubilee was like a separate thing.
I thought she was part of that specific.
I think Jubilee is one of the X-Men.
There's no way Jubilee's a horseman, right? That's crazy.
It'd be weird, but you know, his whole thing is taking good people and making
That's evil. Crazy. I think she's an X-Men. I think they were showing us the X-Men who were in it too.
Yeah. I'm just saying, 80s. He said, always there are four or whatever, and then they showed those four characters.
It's possible. I know that Archangel will be a horseman.
Right.
But there was some interesting stuff here. Like, they mentioned, like, Archangel or Apocalypse. I was kind of surprised they went there, but they were like, he's been called by many names. And they mentioned Yahweh as one of them. I was like, wow. And they're like, they say, like, four horsemen, like, from the Bible. It's like, well, maybe the Bible got it from him. I'm like, okay, you guys are going in.
They actually didn't even say maybe. They said the Bible got it from him.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Yeah. But I don't think Fox News will probably be covering it because it is a 20th Century Fox production.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they've been given a note not to say anything.
Yeah.
It is not part of it.
I mean, all the cast
they were probably returning. More upset over North Star's gay wedding.
Yeah, that's true.
All the cast is returning. We've got some new blood with Game of Thrones alumni playing Jean Grey.
Yeah, I like her as Jean Grey.
I forgot her name.
I forgot that it was it's Sansa from Game.
And she's really good. We get some new characters we haven't seen before. And
you know, of course, what's her name? Mystique. Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, Jennifer Lawrence is front and center in this trailer.
Is now, you know, making Mystique front and center. But the way, as I think you pointed out, Randy, the kind of weird thing with that is that Mystique is kind of very much one of those mutant and proud kind of characters as depicted in the earlier movies.
Yeah.
To have her notably continuing to look like Jennifer Lawrence is a little bit weird.
Yeah.
But I heard she didn't want to do like the costume and all the
I don't blame her.
Stuff on that. So I just wonder if there will be any sort of in-story explanation of it. Like, you know, she got zapped by Forge's, you know, gun, or, you know, they change it to whatever they need. And she, you know, it's harder for her to change. Maybe she's stuck in that form.
I'm going to guess they're going to go with, we do whatever Jennifer Lawrence says, and we didn't write a story reason because nobody will pay attention.
Maybe so.
I don't know. The X-Men movies are not as hardcore about things like that as the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
No, but this is kind of Singer's baby.
Yeah.
So I could see him doing that or not.
Is there no Wolverine in this?
I didn't see him in the trailer.
He's not in the trailer. Rumor is he's in it, but we don't know.
I was going to say, that's a little weird to not have Wolverine in it. Well, but I thought this was his last movie.
Yeah, the X-Men are all like in their
old man, or the next Wolverine will be
Old Man Logan. Last. They said was gonna be the last.
They're in their younger days. He appeared in both First Class movies, basically. Yep. But we know he doesn't join the team until like the 90s, even though time has been altered. So I guess that could change.
Yep.
But yeah, it wasn't like 1999 or 2000. Basically, when the X-Men hits, is when he's supposed to join the team. Maybe they decided it was just like one too many coincidences if he just keeps on teaming up with them over the years, but never joins.
Maybe. I don't know. I thought there was gonna be time travel and they were gonna jump forward to like Age of Apocalypse type stuff.
Yeah.
They're definitely not hinting toward that in the trailer. I don't think it's there.
No. Although they could if they wanted to make that their next movie, so they confront him in this one, it ends with some big to do and changes the timeline.
I don't think they'll do that again.
You don't think?
I don't. And I also don't think they don't tend to end the X-Men movies on cliffhangers.
No, it'd be a change of form for them if they did.
I don't see it happening.
Do we know what the next one is supposed to be, though?
No.
Okay, just curious.
I'm not sure they're thinking that far ahead.
Because an alternate timeline would be, I mean, I think they could have fun with it.
Except that they've already done alternate timelines. They've already done Days of Future Past.
Days of Future Past is a dark future, but the Age of Apocalypse, although I never read the comics, but I know basically everybody ends up in like different camps.
But characters it's also dark.
But characters you think you know end up being something else.
But don't get me wrong, I think it'd be a fun movie. I just don't think they're going
to
do it.
They probably won't immediately. They've got Apocalypse, basically he'll enter their villain stable at this point if he stays alive, or that's the kind of character that's pretty hard to kill even if
he doesn't die. The guy playing Apocalypse, I love that actor.
Yeah, I mean, it's the guy from Ex Machina.
It's the guy from David Simon's thing, Show Me a Hero.
Yeah, isn't he from Ex Machina?
I haven't seen Ex Machina, but I believe that's right. He's an Oscar contender. This is a guy who's a really good actor.
I know that what most people focused on when he first appeared is he's too skinny.
I know. I thought he had nice presence.
Yeah.
Well, and they show him do the growth thing.
Armored up and stuff.
And they do show the growth.
I feel like the costume bulks him up.
They clearly did a lot of CGI work on it. So,
speaking of CG, I did think the CG and it looked kind of weak. But in the same way that it's like, you know that trailers these days, they release it
with
CG,
it's early,
fully rendered.
Yeah.
So I'm not particularly worried about it. I'm like, that's kind of interesting. It looks a little weak.
Yeah, I'm sure it's early on. It seemed like this was the week that all the summer movie trailers started dropping for some reason. I'm not sure. I guess because they're attached to Christmas movies. Is that why?
Well, I think so, probably.
I heard that the one of the other ones we're going to discuss, the Star Trek one, I had heard that that was going to be attached to Star Wars.
Which is kind of crazy.
Which is crazy. Like, I almost feel like when that show's in the theater, like, I'm like, are people going
to
boo it?
So before we move on to Star Trek, though, I want to mention, but remind me to come back to that, because I have a thought on that.
Okay.
X-Men Apocalypse, what's interesting about all these trailers that we're going to talk about, the reaction I've seen online has been largely negative. Like, everybody's hating on them. And I thought this was a solid trailer.
Oh, I don't...
Do people hate the X-Men movies?
We are our Facebook friends, which is kind of our who we were talking about in this. A lot of them are kind of like jaded kind of geeks. You know, we sort of have an embarrassment of riches these days to choose from. And, you know, to some degree, you know, like quality stuff like the Marvel's putting out or the Flash TV show does mean that we can be a little bit tougher on lesser efforts.
Sure.
But there is geeky over entitlement and stuff like that, and it's a little bit weird.
Because I thought this was
I'm in the dark on this one because I thought most of my friends on Facebook have been reacting pretty well to the Apocalypse.
Well, that's what I was saying to Randy earlier. Like, I'm not getting as much negative reaction.
Saw a ton of negative reaction.
No, I mean, at this point, I think people have accepted the fact that Bryan Singer makes a pretty good X-Men movie.
Yeah,
and, well, you know, I think I think there are some people who feel that the X-Men movies have been so eclipsed by Marvel's in-house movies at this point. That, as you know, especially with sort of notable flops like X3 and Wolverine, that they're ready to write that one off as the failed franchise and just sort of make fun of it.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Is there were a couple bad movies. Wolverine Origin and X3 are notably bad movies.
Yeah, people are not as big on First Class. I've liked all the both First Class movies. You know, they've got some warts in there, but overall, I like them.
Dave, we've got friends who are purists.
Yeah,
like that. They don't like the mixed continuity of the movies. Like they want to hue much more closer to the comics.
Yeah, you know what's funny about that to me? They have been mixing their continuity since the year 2000.
Yeah.
That was 15 years ago, people. That's a long time to hold on to a grudge.
I also think, to some extent, there are people who just want the X-Men back.
Yeah.
They want the X-Men movies to flop so that Marvel will get the X-Men and put them in the cinematic universe. They want Wolverine and the Avengers.
That's going to be a ways out.
And I say to you, no. No Wolverine and the Avengers.
I say thee nay.
I say thee nay. I'm not thrilled about Spider-Man being in Civil War.
I say thee nay, bub.
Okay, so moving on to Star Trek.
Yep.
Star Trek Beyond is another one. I see a lot of people really just bad-mouthing this trailer.
You know what's funny is the first spate of people I saw posting it, like yesterday, I guess, were all of their responses were, oh, wow, this looks pretty good. And like, IO9 was like, kicks off with a good, a really strong trailer and stuff. And then I started seeing, like, before the day was out, I started seeing some backlash, people making fun of it. Will Wheaton, poked fun at it for basically being a generic action movie with Star Trek labeled on it.
Which he's not wrong. That's what they do.
Yeah, although I can argue that all of the Star Trek movies, even the ones I most love, whether they're like Wrath of Khan or even some of the Next Generation ones, they do always kind of action them up for the big screen.
Sure.
There's usually a little bit more thought behind them than, say, I think feel like Abrams had, like, some thematic stuff. Like, you know, Wrath of Khan is a great one because it's got fathers and sons and growing old and old enemies and retribution and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, this is definitely going to be a more action-based movie. I mean, more so than probably what Abrams even brought to the table. I mean, it's Justin Lin
from Fast and the Furious. But also... That's a source of a lot of people. A lot of people just want to make fun of Fast and Furious directing a Star Trek movie.
I actually think that's wrong because Justin Lin is a pretty decent director.
Yeah.
Has he made anything else?
He did something else, and I'm blanking on what it was. It was actually something really good. But I can't
honestly,
for the life of me
like
remember
what
it was.
Honestly, I feel like he will slide in pretty easily into the things that Abrams was doing.
Yeah, Abrams did action heavy.
And, it's going to be written in part, if not mostly, by Simon Pegg. Who I think is one of the...
I thought he was maybe more doing, like, script doctoring or stuff. But he actually, no, I think he is more involved, like, more story.
No, he wrote the script.
Yeah, he wrote it.
Yeah, I know that... So here's the... I generally like the trailer.
I thought it was fun.
There was not a lot to guess what's going on.
Nick, is the other thing you're thinking of the Scorpion TV show?
No, I thought there was another movie he did after the Fast and the Furious that I...
Oh, okay, you know what? That's his producer credit. Anyway, continue talking. I'm looking for his IMDb page.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot in this trailer. There were some big action pieces. There were some glimpses. I think I really liked seeing glimpses of other alien races, which I thought was cool.
Yeah. What I was the reason I want to have some hope for this, even though I've been one of the I have kind of sworn off of this movie, this series twice because Abrams' movies feel like something of a betrayal of Trek to me. Like as far as like They did not have that thoughtfulness at their heart that the classic Trek movies have, even though those are also action-oriented.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, man, Trek is dead. But at the same time, I keep going to see him. Well, two movies.
You have more of a fondness, too. Also, I think it's interesting because I also do not like those movies, but from a completely different region. Like, I am not a Trek purist at all.
Right.
I've never seen most of the original series. I have a mild fondness for Next Gen and Deep Space Nine.
Plot holes and dumb lines.
It feels like Hollywood writing, just the worst Hollywood writing. And I see no indication that this movie is going to be any different.
What's funny, Randy, is I know you're extremely hyped to go see the Star Wars movie tomorrow from the exact same guy.
Yeah. No, I love J.J. Abrams.
The writers.
Well, Lindelof is one of the scripters, and I love Lindelof working on Leftovers.
Yeah.
It's and. Roberto Orci and who's his partner?
I would all agree, even those of us who are most critical, that there are lots of moments that work, like individual scenes that are pretty strong in the Abrams' first two Treks. There are good moments in.
Yeah, there are moments in.
Good interplay between crew members. Some good casting. Definitely some good action.
But I tried three times to like that first movie. The first time we went and saw it, I didn't like it. Yeah. I watched it again on video. I didn't like it. I tried again before the.
Wait a second! I thought when you saw it, you liked it.
No.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay.
And then I tried this the third time is when they were putting out Into Darkness. I'm like, okay, let me give this another shot. The night before I went and saw Into Darkness.
Yep.
I still don't like it. I mean, I like it a little better each time, but I still don't like the movie.
Right.
And I really didn't like Into Darkness. I haven't rewatched it.
Into Darkness is pretty rough.
Yeah.
I will say, I guess I wasn't thinking about so much as a movie, but television, he's actually done a few things.
He did True Detective.
He did True Detective. Community. He did Community.
Oh, he directed Modern Warfare. He directed the paintball episode of...
The reason I want to have some hope for this one is because they said they want to go closer to the classic TV show as far as, like, explore some idea or concept. And that say Simon Pegg is involved, and I feel like he's going to try and do right by it.
I like this cast. I know. I do like all the people involved.
They're kind of like what they... Classically, Trek had like Kirk, Spock, McCoy, great three-way kind of... They had moral debates and stuff like that.
Oh, great three-way. What episode was that?
And they were... every episodes. Fanfic ever what episode it was. But, you know, they would explore ideas, but they also had good banter and repartee.
Yeah.
Now, you cut to the new crew, and I feel like they're all kind of like... It's like a fun group to hang out with. A little bit more so than the classic...
Yeah,
but Spock and Kirk seem to alternately hate each other and be friends depending on what the scene calls for.
Right. Well, you know, this Kirk is supposed to be the volatile one that didn't grow up with a father.
Sure,
So that's like, kind of is their hook.
I like the guy who plays Bones.
He's great.
Yeah, Carl Urban. Sure.
Carl Urban. He's great.
I liked him better in Almost Human.
I laughed at his, you know, it's a kind of a Hollywood joke, but there's a bit in the trailer where there's surrounded by a bunch of aliens on some planet that are clearly threatening him, and he's like, well, at least I'm not going to die alone because Spock is next to him, and Spock immediately is transported out. But he's like, well, that's just great. His delivery is what makes it.
Yeah.
But within that trailer, although it is hard to pick up plot points and what is, I guess not even, it's like a teaser, technically.
Yeah.
But it's a long teaser.
Yeah.
There are other alien races. There's the plot, from what I can see, has what looks like some kind of... The Enterprise for sure gets shot down on a planet.
I'm tired of the Enterprise being shot down.
Yeah, all right, but let me make my point.
Okay.
They're on this planet of aliens that seems to... It seems like there's some kind of rebellion or something there, that maybe these aliens have been abused, manipulated, that there's some resources stripped or something, and they seem to think that Kirk is part of it, and clearly there's some other manipulator or big bad going on, and... So whatever is at work is a little bit more than just some bad guy has, like, you know, a new weapon.
All right. Like, so you've made your point. I want to make my point.
All right. Make your little point.
Okay. First of all, big bad, Kirk might be a part of it. Is this going to be another corrupt, the Federation is corrupt story from them? Because that'll be the third one.
Could be.
And I don't like that.
You know what's funny?
I'm not done. Let me make my points. Right. I let you talk.
All right.
I don't like the Enterprise being shot down. I'm tired of that trick. They did that in the original movies, too. And I also just – I don't know. The funny thing is I'm in a weird position of defending this because I didn't like the trailer that much either, and I'm probably not going to see the movie. But everybody's hating on it, and I'm like, at this point, what did you expect? They're not going to change directions for the Star Trek franchise.
Right.
Yeah. And the other thing is when you posted it, I thought it was before I watched it, I thought it was a trailer for the TV show.
Oh, no, I think we're a ways out from that.
Okay,
right?
Yeah, I guess we are. I was thinking that was going to be next year, too, but I guess it's
and
not.
And whatever that show is, I assume they're going to, like, change up cast and stuff. But
it can't possibly be the movie cast.
Yeah, But yeah, it's definitely like it is the third movie, and you're like, oh, it looks silly.
Yeah,
like that's what they do.
That's what they do, and that's why I think I'm done. I gave it two chances. This I gave it multiple chances.
Mainstream Trek, sort of in the same way. Way back when they did the whale one, you know,
yeah.
Star Trek 4.
Yeah.
That was the best-selling, you know, that was like the highest-grossing one until Abrams came along.
That's the first one that got me into Trek.
And it was because it had that mainstream appeal, so yeah. There is...
What a sudden Rotten Tomatoes, it's at like a 90%.
I don't trust them because I don't believe... I think that people want out of this different things than I want. And I'm not a big enough Trek fan to go see it. You've burned me on two movies. I'm not a fan of the franchise in general. I'll wait and see it on Netflix when it pops up. Do you have something you were saying about the Trek? Because
I forgot what I was.
I have sort of a side question related to what I was thinking early on. Are we living in a world where there's going to be the Star Trek Star Wars crossover at some point?
A crossover?
Because imagine how much money that would make.
Yeah.
And J.J. Abrams was involved with both properties, which means he's talked to executives on both sides. Can you see
he's
him pitching?
He's still producing it. Star Trek.
I could see that being pitched.
You know, it'd be bonkers. Yeah. But we've talked about this. This has actually come up in some of these podcasts before, where we're living in a world where there's people have all everybody has grown up with fanfic.
Yeah.
That you know all the shippers and all that stuff. That's a normal part of life. Like kind of growing up now.
And the shared universe is becoming a thing.
And the shared universes is becoming a thing.
Disney Infinity.
Lego and Disney Infinities and stuff like that seem to like really be pushing this. So conceptually, people are prepared for it.
I just think it's possible.
And like, I've seen also a lot of fan films that are like, here's what happens when the Enterprise fights a Star Destroyer.
Exactly,
and edit it cleverly and stuff like that. Some of those are actually halfway decent.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a fan hunger for that kind of thing. Yeah. I could totally see a few years from now when the new Star Wars trilogy is out, you know, and they've done it Rogue One and Boba Fett, and they need something to goose both franchises.
If they were to do it, and I do think that probably one side, probably Disney, would think, We're already mega popular. We don't need to cross over and risk promoting the other.
Or maybe they think we're already popular. It's time for some weird experimentation.
Yes. No.
I don't know if I see this one happening.
I think it's crazy.
It's a bonkers idea, but we are in a time where it's a bonkers idea that could occur.
Yeah. I'm not predicting it. I'm not predicting this will happen, but I won't be shocked if it does.
Well, that's a bonkers thing we have later in the news.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
The Star Trek in particular is known for crossing over into alternate timelines.
Yeah.
Like that. Star Wars doesn't generally.
Yeah.
So I would say that's the easy lead-in if they would ever do it.
Yeah. They should slingshot around the sun and wind up facing a Star Destroyer.
That's right. We can save Alderaan.
That's what they do, although... Oh, that'd be amazing.
Well, actually, you know what? That'd be all right, because they could show an interesting split universe.
Yeah.
They already got their own split universe.
Yeah.
Save Alderaan, save Vulcan.
Yep.
Oh, man. Yeah, this thing writes itself.
Yep.
We may see it in comics, if nothing else. All right, last trailer. The trailer that no one really asked for. The sequel to Independence Day.
Yeah.
The 1992? 94?
It was later. Like 95 or 6.
Yeah. Yeah, because I was in Texas, so it might have been 96.
And weirdly, of the three trailers, I like this one the most.
I kind of agree with you, actually. So this is Independence Day Resurgence. It is 20 years after.
Yep.
So I guess it was like 96.
Yep.
It is 20 years after the original Independence Day.
Yep.
And Jeff Goldblum is leading a team of scientists who have incorporated the alien invading tech.
Right there, you have my money.
Yeah, that's really fun.
Just Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, Nick. I'm going to run down his IMDb page, and I bet I can prove that theory wrong.
I have a fondness for Jeff Goldblum.
So I think I like this premise that they've built up all this tech, and then the aliens come back 20 years later, and they're still not quite ready to fight them off.
Yeah. Right, but they're maybe a little bit better equipped than they used to be.
Yeah.
They don't have to throw together
a virus.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't attack with a computer.
The special effects look fun. I can tell you I'm going to miss Will Smith.
Yeah.
Did you read about that? I saw a blurb on IO9 that in their like viral promotion, they said what the deal is with him. That
I heard it was out there.
In continuity, he's dead.
Oh, okay.
That he was like, you know, I think like maybe helped train people on like the alien tech.
Okay.
And then like during like one of the test missions or something like that, died on it.
Okay.
Now I could see that as a way to actually write him out, or B, have him show up as a surprise
fake
guest
out
at the finale and be like, that was a fake out.
I think he specifically, like the actor specifically wanted out.
Right.
Like
that
so.
Is probably the case.
You have Jeff Goldblum, you've got Bill Pullman.
And yeah. they had, what's his name? Judd Hirsch, right?
Didn't yeah.
Judd
Hirsch? Judd Hirsch yeah. on a fishing boat.
Yep.
He's, Judd Hirsch is awesome.
He was but like, weirdly, was no he? Randy Quaid.
Who was he?
yeah, Randy no, Quaid I know he died. I know he died in the first one.
What about Randy Quaid's son?
It's real.
What?
What about Randy Quaid's son?
Oh, God. Could be in there. He could be in there.
Yeah.
And also Jane from Firefly.
What?
He wasn't there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's right. He was,
oh, that's right. He was the security detail dude. Yep. Yeah.
No, he was like the Air Force. Like,
who was Judd Hirsch, the dad of?
Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm curious to see. I'm honestly shocked that I care because I didn't think I'd care.
Yeah,
but
Independence Day is a fun movie.
It is a fun movie.
It's an extremely fun movie. I remember that as being one of my funnest experiences at the movie theater.
Sure.
Because everyone in that theater was so into it.
But they're so. The problem with the sequel is there weren't really any unanswered questions. There's nothing you need to go back for.
No, it's purely a, let's revisit some old friends and have some fun.
Yeah.
Yep. I saw a friend cracking a joke on Facebook the other day that broke my heart a little. He's like, man, in 27 years, that Pacific Rim sequel is going to be amazing. Because that does seem to be where we're at. It's like it takes about 20 years, and you get a sequel to almost anything.
Right.
So I would like a Pacific Rim sequel in before I die, preferably. So I would like them to do it sooner than, you know, 27 or 30 years or whatever is the future. But anyway, I'm kind of interested in seeing the Independence Day sequel.
There was one more trailer, and I think, I don't know if Randy, you watched it, but I know Dave and I did, the Tarzan one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't see it.
It was actually really good.
Yeah, this is a, I forget who's producing this or if there's a notable director.
Who's the lead?
But the cast is pretty notable.
Who's playing Tarzan? It's somebody notable.
It's somebody notable, and I'm blanking. If it's
not one of those like Hemsworth brothers,
I think it's a Hemsworth brother. Or
you guys bring it up. You're supposed to know.
The notable Nick brought it up. The notable alternate other cast members are Sam Jackson,
Christoph Waltz.
It is Alexander Skarsgård is the guy playing Tarzan.
Yeah.
Christoph Waltz, and I feel like there's somebody else. It's the girl in it. Jane is the
Margot Robbie, who's playing Harley Quinn.
Yep. She's clearly gonna be the geek it girl.
And for sort of, you know, I wasn't really interested in it in the concept, but after watching the trailer and the sort of pulp vibes I was getting, and just sort of
it looked like they were, you know, it had some realism, but it was a big adventure-y movie.
Yeah.
That there was gonna be like lost tribes and. I don't know if there will be magic or anything in there. Like, I don't know if it's going to quite cross that far.
Well, the director is the guy who did the last three Harry Potter movies.
Oh, that's right.
So the writers include someone who wrote the pilot episode of Terrier, so that puts me in.
Okay.
There are three different writers. Actually, there's several writing credits.
I mean, honestly, you throw in Christoph Waltz and Samuel Jackson. It's one of those sort of popcorn affairs, you know?
Well, I noticed that Tarzan's movement in the trees actually somewhat mirrored what Disney did with their cartoon about 10, 15 years ago.
There just
was
no Phil Collins score.
Well, as long as we're talking about other trailers, let's talk about that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles trailer.
Look, I kind of like the Teenage Mutant.
I kind of did too, and I'm not gonna. I mean, I didn't see the other one. I heard it was pretty bad.
It's on Netflix. I thought
it has. It's on Hulu.
It's on Hulu now.
Bebop and Rocksteady are in it.
I know,
and they look good.
Stephen Amell is Casey Jones.
Stephen Amell is Casey Jones,
and it has a van that fires super covers.
It has the van. Yeah, it looks goofy as hell.
Decide to embrace the insanity of the cartoon.
Now, let me quick ask: is Michael Bay produced but did not direct.
Produced. It's directed by the guy, Dave Green, who did Earth to Echo, which was sort of an E.T.-esque movie that I saw that I thought was okay.
Yeah.
I have a feeling I won't be seeing this, but I have to admit, seeing Bebop from Rocksteady, even though I don't have a particular nostalgic attachment to them, I thought
like,
it was kind of cool.
The alien invasion looked like the Krang people.
Yeah.
You know what weirdly was the one that I was like most excited about was seeing Baxter Stockman played by Tyler
Perry.
Yeah. It's Randy, insane. But.
You know, it was a small but notable role. Tyler Perry's role in Gone Girl was actually really
good. He was great,
He was basically Johnny Cochran, but he was a really entertainingly sleazy lawyer.
Yeah, I love Tyler Perry in that movie.
But as trailers go, it was very satisfying.
Yeah, it was kind of fun.
Yeah, I was a little shocked. I'd forgotten about that.
They're getting really good at making good trailers for bad movies. Because I have a feeling, of all the movies we discussed, maybe one of them's going to be good.
That's probably true.
Summer movies is always a little tough. This summer was pretty good. We got a pretty good run of summer movies this year.
Yeah.
But usually it's a season of disappointment. Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on from movie trailers to movie news. An Austinite is writing Doctor Strange.
That's true.
Yeah. Robert Cargill, who you might have read, he has a couple horror novels, and wrote Sinister.
That's the big one.
Which is why he's buddies with the guy who's the director of Doctor Strange. There was some speculation he might be involved, but it seemed like that was not the case, and now he's involved. He is doing a pass on the script.
Well, apparently he's been writing it for like a year or so.
Yeah. Now this guy is close friends with some of our friends, which is kind of funny. I've met him a couple times. I don't know him that well, but I'm kind of glad to see, you know, local boy done good.
Yep. And we can all get tours of the set.
Yes.
Here's an Eye of Agamotto for everyone.
But it also means they're probably going in a little more horror-y direction, which I think is kind of cool for Doctor Strange.
Yeah, well, very much so.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, do you think it does? I mean, I guess that's probably what they brought him in for.
I mean,
yeah.
You have that writer, you've got
director of Sinister,
with more sort of horror tendencies.
Here's the thing, though, they may be doing a little horror-y, but Cargill, I know, is a comics fan. Like, right. He knows comics.
Yeah. And also, they still have to play nice with the sort of what Marvel wants and sort of out of the movie. So, yeah. I mean, you have to work within the constraints of their ideas.
Yeah.
So.
Cargill, of course, also used to write for In Cool News.
Yeah.
And wrote some of my favorite stuff over there. So I'm excited about this. I think that's a good call. Speaking of, Cargill's also friends with a buddy of ours, a longtime customer, Jason Murphy.
Yes.
Who has Jason was on Hacking the System for National Geographic with his buddy Brian Brushwood, who is like a street magician. And
They did all kinds of crazy stuff.
Crazy stuff. Well, Nat Geo is not picking up another season of Hacking the System. They did two. Unfortunately, they're not doing a third.
Yeah.
But Brian and Jason are taking it to YouTube with a new show called Modern Rogue. Which, by the way, Modern Rogue is really hard to search on YouTube, so I'll put a link in our show notes. But basically, where they do whatever crazy stuff. The first one is just a 5-minute video of them doing inhaling whiskey.
Yes.
They're trying out the vaporizing alcohol thing.
Yeah. Which is, I'd never heard of before, and it's crazy.
Apparently it's a
exact
thing.
It's that kind of thing that college students would be doing.
Yep.
But, I mean, I have to say, Jason brought the science.
Yeah.
I was very impressed.
Jason and Brian are both pretty entertaining together, and you compared him to Alton Brown.
I did compare Jason to an Alton Brown, and I stand by that.
But yeah, if you get a chance, it's a short video. Go check that out. Those guys are always fun. If you have Nat Geo, the Hacking the System is a really fun show too.
It is. It really is.
All right. So other TV news: the Xena reboot, which I forgot it was a thing.
Yep.
Has got a showrunner and head writer, and
it was rumored like some months ago, and then it like. Didn't happen.
Really. I saw this, but I didn't really glance at the articles. Like, well, who's involved?
Javier Grillo-Marchwatch is the guy running the show, who you might know as the guy who wrote and helped run The Middleman.
Yes.
Both the comic and the TV show, and he also worked on Lost.
Right.
He's also somewhat local. He was a San Antonio guy.
He also did some comics work. He worked on the Annihilation stuff.
Yeah, he's done some comics work as well. He's a talented writer.
He is.
My interest in the Xena reboot went up a couple notches when I saw that he was attached.
I believe they said that Lucy Lawless herself is not attached at the moment, or at least is not formally. Nobody's dropped.
Well, there's that meme that they're not that old. That she and the original and Renee, the original Xena and Gabrielle should just play the roles again.
Yeah.
But they're in a reboot, and I feel it makes sense to do a reboot.
Yeah, I also feel like sensibilities have changed a little bit, so I assume it'll still be sort of an action comedy like it was, whatever they do. But they'll probably tweak how they. Envision the comedy.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
I mean, I like the original Xena stuff, and I'm kind of looking forward. I mean, the female empowerment and all that kind of stuff was ahead of its time.
Yep.
So right now, we're in a moment. I feel like they probably need to do the colorblind casting and maybe bring in some people of color for their casting.
I believe that show largely employed every bodybuilder in, like, New Zealand.
Yes, yes.
They're like, hey, could you play a caravan guard? How about some attacking bandits? How about the King's Royal Guard?
I think that's probably true.
So really, it's an era for muscle men.
It's a fun show.
Also coming to TV, although it's Canadian TV, so I don't know when we'll get it here, but Essex County, which is Jeff Lemire's sort of original property that he did about sort of a hockey player and a kid and small town Canada and that kind of thing.
Realistic? I've never actually read it.
Yeah, it's realistic.
No, is there any surreal element in there?
I believe there's somewhat.
Like there's werewolves?
I don't think there's any magic or anything, but it is a little surreal, and then it's Jeff Lemire.
Sure.
But it was good. I've read the first one. I haven't read the whole complete thing.
Uh-huh.
But that is coming to TV. It's being developed. The writer has done some work on Sci-Fi's Killjoys and some other stuff. So I'm curious to see. It seems like Lemire's about to make that jump to TV stuff. Hopefully he will stay with us here in comics.
Yeah, he's been on quite the roll for the last several years.
All right. So switching over to movie stuff, there is Paramount is announcing, speaking of shared universes, the weirdest shared universe I think I've heard of. So they already have G.I. Joe and Transformers, and they've said now they're going to blend those into one universe. They're also going to bring in Mask, Micronauts, Rom, and the Visionaries.
I think I missed Mask.
Yeah.
Now, I have not read up on this. I just heard about it this morning. Does this mean that there will be one singular movie that somehow has all of this stuff? Or that, like, I will be watching the next G.I. Joe movie and, like, Transformers are just going to be part of it?
I believe that second thing. Will
be using Transformers or something.
I think that's what we're looking at.
And they'll be like, G.I. Joe, we're merging you with this special branch called Mask that have undercover
vehicles. I think it's along those lines, yes.
They should go ahead and throw in every single toy property of the 80s.
Yeah.
All the forgotten ones. Yes. Smurfs. Should be in there.
Yeah. Silverhawks.
Silverhawks, Thundercats.
Yep.
That seems so bonkers to mix that many that I can't even imagine it.
You know, the thing is, I'd be excited about this, except that the basis of it is the Bay Transformers films and the, let's face it, disappointing G.I. Joe films. Even though we all have a fondness for Rise of Cobra, it is by no means the perfect G.I. Joe movie.
Right. I don't assume the presence of a Micronaut will make it better.
my biggest excitement about this is not for the movies themselves, but the fact that if there's a movie being made, there's money to be made, and maybe all the rights will get worked out, and we'll get those original ROM comics and the original Micronauts comics back in print.
Right. I'm sure there'll be lots of toy production from them, too.
Yeah.
I could really see a Masked movie working.
I can see any of these movies working. I have a friend who suggested, my friend Dave Van Domelen, who suggested online, he's like, what I would do is I would reboot the G.I. Joe and ignore the old movies, and I would present it as the Transformers tech is the basis of all of this. So, like, G.I. Joe is the government trying to use Transformers tech. Mask is private enterprise trying to use Transformers tech. Rom is someone that Optimus Prime meets in his space travels, which I guess is the thing he does. And then he said the Visionaries is the weird one. But Nick and I are like, the Visionaries could be a weird post-apocalyptic thing where, like, the Transformers cause – Visionaries are like knights with, like, holographic banners and stuff.
Are they futuristic?
They're in a sort of post-apocalyptic. Okay. There's, like, no other technology except for Visionary technology.
So you think it could have been a time travel?
I think it could be a – we were thinking Terminator-style thing. Like, they come back and try to prevent this apocalyptic future where the Transformers have caused it.
I have the entire series of Visionaries on DVD.
And
it's a fun show. Pass.
Hard pass.
If you would like
hard pass.
And Mask. What was the hook on Mask?
Transforming vehicles with drivers.
And they also had helmets that had powers.
They had helmets that had powers.
Fair enough.
Yeah, they had.
Their leaders were Matt Tracker for the guys and Miles Mayhem for the villains.
They had cool car like the one of the guys.
One Mask toy. I had the motorcycle.
That's what I had too. The motorcycle that turns into a helicopter. That's just cool.
Yeah,
and I actually had the car where the little like the doors go out and it become wings and becomes a flying.
That
car.
Was Matt Tracker.
That was Matt Tracker. Yep. Anyway,
I want a helmet that has powers.
I'm not excited about any of this particularly, but I'm excited about the potential spinoffs of it.
It's kind
of
crazy. I still don't know exactly how they're going to do it and if it will work.
But everybody wants a shared universe now.
I know, that's the new thing.
How often has it... What are the big successes? Is there anything other than Marvel?
Marvel.
I feel like...
It's Marvel.
They've talked about, they're like, let's do a Ghostbusters shared universe, and they're like, that kind of didn't happen.
It hasn't happened.
Like, let's do all the classic movie monsters shared universe,
and that hasn't really gone.
That's kind of floundering.
Yeah.
So...
Nobody's made it work except for Marvel. Marvel's made it work so well.
DC's gonna try.
I was gonna say, like, there's at least, like, the Flash and Arrow TV shows are another example of it kind of working out.
Star Wars, they're wanting to do the same thing. They're wanting to do a big epic.
But that makes sense.
Yeah.
To
Star
bring,
Wars
you know,
will work.
Yeah, they can have Boba Fett and all that for the side.
Yeah, if you can release a Star Wars movie every year or two every year, people will be happy to go see them.
Two movies, couple of seasons on Netflix, people will be just fine.
Yep. But anyway, a little odd. Finally, one last bit of actual board game news. The creators of the game Lords of Waterdeep, Peter Lee and Rodney Thompson, who... If you guys haven't played Lords of Waterdeep, it's a great game.
It really is.
They are creating a new game for Gale Force 9, which apparently is licensing a lot of stuff out of D&D, called Tyrants of the Underdark, which is players are pitted against each other. There's a battle to win territory. They're each playing the head of a drow house. They recruit monsters, cultists, and demons, locations including Menza Barazin and Blingdenstone. So...
Saying those drow names might be the toughest challenge this game has.
I'm excited. I think it's going to be in spring 2016. I really love Lords of the Underdark. or I really love Lords of Waterdeep, and I'm looking forward to the Underdark Drow version.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be basically a Let's Be Bad Guys kind of yeah, where you get to play evil, scary dark elves.
It sounds like fun. So that's pretty cool. All right, that is our Overstuffed News segment for the week. We'll be back in just a few seconds to talk about comics for the week. All right, we are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, December 16th. And Nick, why don't you kick us off?
Cool. I'm going to pick the only Marvel book that any of us will pick this week.
Yeah, there's only one Marvel book in the picks this week.
Crazy. We've turned our backs on Marvel and we'll never pick them again.
But you know what I haven't turned my back on? What? Star Wars.
No.
No, this is a Darth Vader annual, which again, it's an annual. Wasn't expecting much.
I had to talk several people into the Star Wars annual last week. They were like, I don't really do annuals. And I'm like, no, me neither. Trust me.
Yeah, I mean, Star Wars seems to be one of those properties where an annual will work.
I think, broadly speaking, none of us are huge enthusiasts for the annual as a concept.
As a concept, no.
But when you get something good,
sure,
you acknowledge
it. I know a few fantastic ones. Most everything else is kind of mediocre.
Yeah.
This one is definitely head and shoulders above.
This one's really good.
It's written by Kieran Gillen, so the guy who's actually writing Darth Vader decided to write this one shot. And they decided to get a pretty talented artist in Lineal Francis Yu, coming off of his Secret Wars Civil War stuff. And he does some great work here. But this is all sort of about Darth Vader visiting a planet. It almost, this planet made me think of the planet where Anakin...
Mustafar.
Yeah, is that...
I'm actually surprised they never referenced it.
Yeah.
Because there's all this lava everywhere, but...
And I was like... You know,
but yes,
very reminiscent. Is it an original planet?
Yeah, it's an original planet. They've got royalty, and they mine for the Empire.
Yeah, basically mining for the Empire. But not everything is as it seems, and Vader has his own sort of side mission, and so do the royals of this planet. And it involves, I mean, there's some great cameos by some of our favorite murderous droids.
Yes, BT and
BT
and Triple Zero, who are really, to me, the stars of the Darth Vader book, have some great moments in here.
I mean, these original characters just rule all. They're hilarious.
This is basically, just like last one was sort of a standalone of something you don't see in the Star Wars universe of, like, an undercover spy for the Rebels. This is... How does Darth Vader enforce the Empire's will on a planet? What does the Empire get out of these planets they control? And it's a really interesting side story.
Huh. I have not read this yet.
And
so
it has
I'm
a scene which you never thought you would see Darth Vader dancing.
That's probably true.
But there is a moment of it.
In a way. In a way.
Interested. I'm terrified.
Yep.
This is just, don't get me wrong, this is Vader being a badass.
Yeah.
Total and utterly a badass.
Popping, locking.
Yep.
I think it's a fantastic issue. It's got, that message that don't screw with Darth Vader.
Yeah. What's interesting is, as we started out, as I was reading it, I was not super enthused. I was like, I don't know if I need this side story. And then when I got about halfway in, I fell in love with it.
In a lot of ways, it reminded me of some of the better episodes of Clone Wars, where you were kind of going into it like, are they going to make something out of this? And then you're like, this is one of my favorite episodes. So, very much worth your time.
Yeah, really good. Dave, what's your pick?
My pick is the second issue of Claws or Klaus or
I believe it's Claws. We've been calling it Klaus.
Yeah.
Because it's fun to say Klaus.
I mean, it's spelled Klaus.
Yep.
Anyway, yes, the Claws with a K, like an old world Germanic version of
yes.
it. This is, of course, Grant Morrison's Santa Claus Year One.
Yep.
We discussed the first issue. It's a sort of a... Our lead character is kind of a... he's like a hunter.
Huntsman.
Trapper.
Yeah, hunter and trapper with sort of a good-natured tough guy.
Yeah.
Who has encountered this city that's kind of ruled with an iron fist. He's come back after... It used to be a place of happiness and good times.
Yeah.
But now it is a sort of...
It's
an oppressive place. There's kind of a cruel overseers like the king and queen. They have this super spoiled...
Bratty kid.
He's a little Joffrey kid.
Yep.
And this begins where the previous one left off, where I forget exactly how. Well, I guess he woke up from this weird vision he had in the previous one, surrounded by these little sort of magically crafted toys.
Yeah.
Which he in the opening, there's a cool opening sequence where he kind of infiltrates the city, goes over the wall. There's some humor too.
Yep.
But he gets in and he gets these toys to all the kids who wake up the next day with like the first like good thing that they've had in ages.
Yeah.
By the way, you compared the kid to Joffrey.
Yeah.
I think he's more like Robin from Game of Thrones, more the one who's like super like he has the spoil from
Aunt Lady.
Yeah. Yeah. In the Eyrie.
Oh yeah.
He's more like
that's
that.
A better
yeah.
comparison.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a better comparison.
And so even as like the king feels like he's like the people are having such a good time that maybe he's like kind of losing his grip on the populace and is, you know, maybe needs to clamp down harder on him. And they also like his guards and stuff know that the guy what's his name in this? Did they set his name?
I don't
name,
know. I think that was just Klaus. I thought it was just Klaus or something.
Did they just call him that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Sure.
It's just Klaus.
But they know that he's inside the walls of the city, which is it is a big walled sort of castle city. And so, like, all of their enforcers are out looking for him. They've got special guards assigned to take him down. Anyway, it's a mixture of kind of action with some... There's a humorous undertone mm-hmm. to
yeah.
some of the scenes.
Yeah.
And this kind of little bit of Christmas magic percolating in the background.
Yep.
It's essentially all the stuff I liked about the first one. It's a surprisingly straightforward thing from Morrison. There is no mushroom scene in this
yeah.
one.
I mean, it feels like Morrison in that he does the hopeful thing that All-Star Superman, that kind of thing.
Morrison
but yeah, it's pretty
infected
it's pretty straightforward.
By the holiday spirit. This is what yeah. he's bringing us.
But I also think it feels like sort of a, you know, it could almost fit as like an otherwise a kind of classic fantasy story.
Who's the artist in this? The art is beautiful.
Yeah, Dan Mora. Who is
it's really nice. The snow effects are gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, you will palpably feel the icy chill of this city. You know, it has that sort of beautifully rendered look that we normally associate with European comics.
And is he doing his own coloring? Because the coloring is also just stunning.
It says illustrated by, so clearly.
So yeah, because the colors are really
yeah.
nice.
I wonder how long this has been in the works.
I don't know.
Coming out as it is now, because it's super detailed. What was I going to say? Something about that art. Oh, right. Normally I find the European comics, I just can't get into most of them. A lot of them are just a little too dry and boring for me. Even the ones that are action-oriented somehow feel boring to me.
Yeah.
This is not, of course, a true European comic, even if its creators may be European. And it feels very energetic. I like it much more than most Euro comics. But it has that Euro beautiful look.
Yeah.
Anyway, so... a lot of people are already reading this. They've been asking us about the second issue. It's here.
Yay.
The first issue has
and it's
new
good.
Printing out. So yeah, it's the perfect book to get your holiday spirit on.
Before we move on to my pick, I have a little thought experiment for you gentlemen.
Okay.
This is Grant Morrison's Claus. I would like to invite you to imagine Frank Miller's Claus.
I think there would be a lot more of... you remember Jingle Bell created by Paldini?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The sort of...
I was thinking,
good-hearted, but teenage daughter of Santa Claus. Imagine if she had been a whore.
I was thinking more of a sexy ninja Mrs. Claus. Also a whore.
Yep. First person narration from
yeah,
Santa
a lot of first
Claus.
Person. The snow, the snow falls
in,
on my cap.
It's cold in the North Pole. Cold as my heart.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. One more. Rob Liefeld's Claus.
It's like Santa with a ton of pouches.
Yeah.
Really
a lot
nice.
Of pouches. A gun.
Right. He doesn't need one singular pack for his toys.
Yes.
He has a million toy pouches.
And guns.
And
burrito guns.
From a burrito shaped gun.
And you never see his feet.
And you never see his feet. You can never see his boots.
Except for the reindeer feet, which are a little weird. I give you one other.
Yes?
Bendis's Claus.
Oh, lots of talking.
It's just two elves in a workshop talking.
Two elves in a workshop talking. Oh, my God, that's it. That is totally it. Yes. Okay, one more. Garth Ennis's Claus.
I don't think we can talk about
it. That's a right little immature.
Garth Ennis's Claus might look somewhat like my pick.
I'm sure, by the way, it would involve somebody violating a reindeer.
Yeah, there'd be vomit. All the elves would be drinking and vomiting.
Yep. All right, Randy, what you got for your actual pick?
My pick is the goddamn number two.
Okay. Speaking of Garth Ennis,
type. Yes, yes. This is Jason Aaron's... pre-apocalyptic, post-apocalyptic, biblical story.
Yeah.
And
it's
now
pre-flood. Yeah,
it is art by R.M. Guerra, who is the guy who did Scalped with him. And it's really, really nice. So now that we're in the second issue, I feel like I can spoil the twist for the first issue a little bit.
Right.
Which is the first arc, at least, seems to be setting up for the protagonist is an eternal living Cain who can't be murdered.
Right.
Popped up against a somewhat psychopathic Noah.
Yeah, and his sons.
And his sons,
right,
who are going out grabbing animals for their ark.
Yep. It's a direct inversion of, well, both the traditional biblical story. Although I don't know, but Darren Aronofsky's Noah, because I don't think the biblical story particularly pit Cain as a antagonist for Noah. But in Darren Aronofsky's, he was the bad guy.
Yeah,
and this flip flops that where
Noah's sort of the bad guy.
Noah's sort of the bad guy. He's sort of almost like God's thug.
Well, you get more of Noah in this issue. Like last issue, he just sort of showed up and he's like, "What kind of animals do you have?" And it was a great little moment.
Yeah.
This time it starts off with him running across some of what they call the Ravagers, and sort of raining terror on them. It's interesting. He's sort of an anti-hero role because, the Ravagers, of course, are raping, murdering, baby eating, horrible people.
They're the worst
people.
Kind of post-apocalyptic marauders.
And he is definitely doing the, I am God's will. And he has an iron axe, which in this, Stone Age is kind of a notable thing.
Right.
There's a ton of F-bombs dropped in this book.
It is definitely one of the filthiest comics of the year.
It does feature one of my favorite lines of dialogue I've read all the year, which is, "Ugh, fuck Wunga." That is the sound that
he's having a little bit of fun with it.
That is the sound a Ravager makes when he throws his axe at Noah, for the record. But anyway, so there's a lot of Noah and his son sort of gathering up. And then there's Cain, who really just wants to die. He wants to be rid of this curse that he cannot be killed. And so he's going around causing mayhem, but he runs across a woman whose son has been taken by these marauders. And there's a question of whether or not he's going to leave her behind, you know, because he's amoral, or if he's going to show a little streak of humanity and maybe help her out.
Right.
This was a really good second issue. I love this book. It's got that sort of bleakness that I thought Cormac McCarthy's The Road has. Like, this is a world that God has turned his back on.
Right. Even the best people are completely compromised.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's. I think, you know, when I saw Noah, the Aronofsky thing, one of the interesting things that they did do in there, mostly Cain was a straight-up bad guy.
Yeah.
But a few scenes where he was kind of talking, making his case, he kind of, made a decent case for, like, maybe why they shouldn't just blindly follow God, and that he had abandoned them, and so who was he to say that they shouldn't have been doing what they were doing when it was, you know, his deprivations that forced them into this. And I was like, oh, he's kind of making a pretty good case here.
Yeah.
And I think I almost get the feeling that Aaron saw that and he's like, that's where the story is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, I think that maybe a little bit of that sort of free will kind of may emerge as sort of the
thing. I think so.
So it's interesting.
But I'm loving this so far. I'm really enjoying this book. So it's on my it won't be on my best of list because there's only two issues. And I feel it's too early to judge, but it could be on next year's best of list.
We could have a best most promising comic or something like that.
I do have that list. In fact, I'll have all my best of. We may be doing best of next week.
Visually, it has a great, a very beautifully rendered bleakness. There is a sort of there's a depth to its sort of geography, even though it's it is all very wastelandy.
Yeah, gray and orange but green.
He will make it feel like a fairly vast, vistas and like kind of junk cities and stuff like that.
Yeah. My cheater pick is the polar opposite of The Goddamned, also from Image. This is Mark Miller and Raphael Albuquerque's Huck, which is about a sort of a simple guy who lives in a small town who has Superman type powers, except he also has tracking powers.
Yeah, he has tracking abilities.
Basically, he can find anyone, and it's sort of an instinct, kind of a knack kind of thing, anyone or anything. And in the last issue, again, we didn't want to give away the twist when we talked about it, but basically he got outed by a reporter who had moved to town, and all of a sudden it's a big, like, the world knows about this guy. And so in this issue, the world comes to his doorstep and asks for help. And instead of doing the sort of overwhelmed thing, this is Mark Miller's reaction to Man of Steel, where it was sort of like Superman as a failure, Superman as a dark, gritty hero.
I actually love the character's reaction to it.
He gets a bunch of people. Like, there's a mom who says, her husband disappeared 5 years ago, and she's got kids. There's a couple that says their daughter disappeared after an argument. It's 18 months ago. There's a brother who's a contractor in Afghanistan. And there's another kid who's like, can you find my dog? And he gets a pen and he just writes, missing husband, missing daughter, missing brother, missing dog. And he goes and finds them all. And he has power enough to rescue them. And so the news is following him during this whole thing. And it shows him sort of doing good and rescuing. Meanwhile, out in Russia, there's a science city where they've been experimenting on a psychic, which will probably wind up being something of a nemesis for him. And then there's a big twist again at the end. So, but not any Miller, like, awful twist. It's just kind of an interesting
twist. Plot twist.
Yeah.
Plot twist.
This is a really hopeful superhero book.
It is.
And it's Raphael Albuquerque from American Vampire.
He always works with great artists.
So, I liked issue one and loved issue two.
Yep.
So I'm very much on board this book. Nick, what is your issue? What is your cheater pick?
I have another Image book for you.
Yep.
This one is Scotty Young's I Hate Fairyland, which,
more between Goddamned and Huck?
Yeah, I mean, it's still filthy.
Leans a little more
toward Goddamned and, like, Calvin and Hobbes.
I mean, the main character is still sort of spouting her, kind of a hilarious, bad language, like Muffin Fluffer.
Right, they don't use real bad language, but it's like every word in the book is turned into some kind of bubblegum version of it.
It'd be like a dirty talking Smurf.
Exactly. Yes, it is. It is a dirty topic.
I think probably people know the premise at this point, but just very briefly.
Essentially, it's about a young girl who gets kind of pulled into fairyland and to find a key, and she can't find the stupid key. And she's been there for almost 30 years. She hasn't aged. She's just gone insane.
She's mentally grown up.
And it's sort of, the tables have kind of turned on her in the sense that this fairyland is tired of her. And they're actually trying to outright kill her now. Mm-hmm. And she's tough to kill.
Well, that's also because she's been going around doing things like shooting the Happy Moon and all that
kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah. So. It's just, it's fun. It's kind of insanity, and it's kind of Looney Tunes hilarity.
Yeah.
The main character is a lot of fun to watch.
Sounds like Looney Tunes by way of Tim Burton or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
essentially along those lines. I like the interplay between her and her sort of Jiminy Cricket,
yep.
which is this flying fly. I don't know. I think it's the best book Scotty Young's written, and I love his art. So, you know, I'm continuing to dig it, and at this point, I'm like, yeah, I'll buy a trade of it.
Dave, what continuing Image book do you have for us on Cheater Picks?
Indeed, yep, it's Image. Image is controlling the Cheater Picks this week.
Yep.
True.
I have Descender number 8. We've talked about this series all over the place.
Yep.
Sci-fi action adventure with a kind of a bit of a heart beating somewhere under the edgier stuff.
Is it a robotic, a mechanical heart?
Probably so, yeah. Since it's a little robo kid. The star of this one, though, is actually the adult version of the kid that the robot kid originally was assigned to be the playmate to. He is now like this kind of tough, edgy bounty hunter. Traveling around with aliens. He like specifically hunts robots.
Yep.
And do we know, Randy, like why he's trying to track down Tim?
I'm gonna guess something went wrong with them in their past.
Yeah.
I noticed, and I don't think this is a nod, but I noticed his name is Andy.
Yeah.
Like the kid in Toy Story.
Oh, weird. I guess it could be.
Actually, it might be a nice.
It might be a nod.
Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoyed the repartee between he's working with an alien who's kind of a chatty guy who's a big blobby-looking alien who
yep.
is excited to name their ship and give it a cool, dangerous-sounding name. And he's very kind of taciturn about the whole thing. He's not really into it, but like later on he does drop a name for it. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty cool. So while he's tracking him down, we see flashbacks for the first time ever of when he was a kid and when he was the Tim 21 robot who's been our sort of eyes, point-of-view character for most of the series. You know, you see some of what was going on with them seemingly right when the big cataclysm occurred with all the giant robots going on. So there's lots of glimpses of that, and there's an very interesting sequence in which they're traveling through this area of space and that's supposed to be haunted.
Hmm.
And indeed, there are some weird ghostly alien things going on in there with these strange ectoplasmic-looking aliens that are... motives and intent are hard to decipher. I guess I forgot. This whole issue is the pair of them. So I'd call it the Bounty Hunter issue then.
Okay,
cool. With lots of cool little side turns and flashbacks in it. Probably at this point people are already on board or not, but there's a $10 trade out there that's a great way to get on board. And then we're only like two or three issues into the new arc,
yep.
So if you liked it, you could easily get on board these single issues.
Yes, indeed. All right, so the rest of the stuff on my list this week, I've got Ms. Marvel number 2, which continues to be one of my favorite books. Beautiful art by Takeshi Miyazawa. Silk number 2, which is another... there's some really fun stuff in here with her being undercover and getting tired trying to be a hero and undercover villain, and introduces a new hero who helps her out mysteriously. Web Warriors number 2, which is the multiversal Spider-Man taking on a multiversal Electro team,
idea.
Which is a fun idea and really... there's some really fun stuff in here. Beauty number 5, which they're trying to come up with a cure for the beauty disease, and that's a really good issue. And then finally, a reprint of a long ago Elseworlds, They've retired the Elseworlds logo, but they're finally starting to put out some of those printings.
Oh, weird. I guess it doesn't have the Elseworlds logo.
But this is Batman, the Doom That Came to Gotham. It is basically a Mike Mignola story of, and he's not the artist on this. It's Troy Nixie on art. But Mike Mignola is a co-writer of Batman versus Lovecraft, basically. It takes place in 1928. The Penguin sort of is one of the guys who finds these weird, you know, Antarctic thing. And
yep. Yeah, there's early on, there's this, I think like one of these emperor penguins, and it's like clearly infected with this like weird tentacly kind of polyps and things like that.
Yep.
If I'm not mistaken, I feel like maybe, Tim Drake and like Dick Grayson are like his sons or his adopted sons. And it's like, they're like traveling with him to the Arctic and stuff in the beginning. So it has all, it lends his Batman through that sort of 30s explorer sensibility.
Yeah.
And, I'm looking forward to the revisit on it.
Yeah, it's really fun, and I'm glad they were starting to print some of this stuff, because it's
been super hard to find.
It's been really hard to find. It's good stuff. Nick, what else is on your list?
Second issue of All New X-Men, which was continues to look at Cyclops trying not to be Cyclops.
Sure.
This is
Young Cyclops from the 60s.
Young Cyclops, right.
The second issue of The Mighty Thor, which sees Loki return to the war.
Yep, he seems really happy.
Yeah, he's very happy. There's a new series of Judge Dredd books, which I thought was pretty good. The new Starbrand and Night Mask. This one's kind of important because it's written by Greg Weisman. It's about
Weisman of Gargoyles,
Star Wars Rebels.
It takes two characters that were sort of Jonathan Hickman from the new universe, and kind of puts them in college and pits them against, everyday life and larger than life supervillains.
They're roommates, right?
They are roommates.
So it's essentially kind of two lesser known heroes as roommates / superheroes.
Yeah. And there's a little bit of an Odd Couple vibe to them too.
That makes sense. The first issue of, the new Squadron Supreme, by James Robinson and Leonard Kirk.
There's a notable thing that happens in here.
There is a huge thing that happens in here.
Marvel Universe-wise.
If
everything is what it looks like.
Yeah.
Which looks like.
Squadron Supreme is all people who came from universes
that were destroyed.
I honestly think if you have any fondness for the Authority, this is definitely a book you need to read.
They all come from universes that were destroyed in the lead-up of Secret Wars.
Yep.
Right. And now they're going to, like, we're going to save this world whether you like it or not. And so they're apparently, I haven't read it yet, but I just know the premise for making a sign for it. They're going to stomp on anyone who gets in their way.
Right.
They got the power to do it.
And they're also going to get revenge for the people who destroyed their world, which includes the Illuminati.
Interesting. Yes.
Third issue of Uncanny Inhumans. The second issue of All New Inhumans.
A lot of Inhumans.
There are a lot of Inhumans.
A lot of Marvel second and third issues this week.
Yep. There's also a new Lucifer series. This is one I haven't checked out yet, but I do like the art by Lee Garbett. I've followed his career ever since the... I forgot what he... He's done a lot of stuff.
Highwayman with Mark Bernardin. Yeah.
And then that is all that I have. All
right. Let's see. What do I have?
Go ahead.
Illuminati number 2. This is the supervillain kind of team book that Marvel launched recently, where the sort of lesser-known bruiser supervillainess Titania. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. She joins up with the Hood's new... Basically, they're like a Sinister Six or Avengers Masters of Evil type.
Yeah.
And this continues to follow their story. Every once in a while, the humor was a little too lightweight for me, but mostly I'm kind of liking this look inside what it's like to work with a supervillain crew. There's a book called Star Trek Starfleet Academy that I found surprisingly fun, that follows a group of kids, like Starfleet Academy attendees, and intermixes their story with flashbacks of Kirk, Spock, and Uhura in their academy days. Hmm. Did we mention the Dragon Age?
Nope.
Dragon Age has a comic that I don't know if it's a miniseries or not. I couldn't tell from reading
it
last night.
I'm not sure
either. But the notable thing is that it's written by Greg Rucka, who lately we've been really loving for, say, Lazarus.
Yep.
But goes back to as far as Queen and Country.
Right.
Great crime writer, and hopefully does some...
And Rucka's a gamer, so...
Right. So hopefully he'll do some good work with Dragon Age. I have to mention the Grandpa Simpson's Unbelievable Adventures... comic, just it's a Grandpa Simpson special.
Yep.
That is written in the choose your own adventure style.
Yep.
At the end of every single page is a you decide what crazy thing Grandpa does, and then flip to the appropriate page to see how it turns out. Anyway, it looked really funny. And then lastly, I just wanted to do a quick shout out to a book from last week, or actually like 2 or 3 weeks ago that I just randomly read, and I posted about this on the store's Facebook page and on my own page.
Ain't nobody read your Facebook page.
No, I got a lot of likes on these. So, Jim Henson's The Storyteller, specifically Dragons. This is the second Storyteller miniseries I think they've done. Maybe the second. And each one looks at different cultures' versions of some concept. In this case, dragons. I forget what the previous one was.
I don't remember.
Fairies,
either.
Giants, something. Anyway.
Salesman.
This first one is a story about a Native American spin on dragons, specifically the concept of the horned serpent. And it's about the cover is what grabbed me because it had really interesting looking sort of Native American iconography on this giant dragon coming up from a lake, and there's a father and son who are fishermen who end up getting embroiled in this sort of the war between these serpents and the thunderbirds, which is a concept that people are more familiar with, I guess, from Native American folklore. But I guess in the traditional stories, this doesn't adapt a specific story, but more concepts, are at war with the horned serpents. And basically, two humans kind of get caught up in it. It goes rather poorly for them. The powers are just so far beyond them. And but some interesting twists and turns come out of it. They're trying to... It's sort of about fathers and son, you know, his father's love for his son. And it is a really neat little done-in-one little fairy tale kind of story in a setting you don't very often see. Native American mythology does not often make its way into comics except sort of on the outskirts.
Who's the artist on this?
It's certainly somebody I don't know. Fabian Rangel Jr.?
No, that's the writer.
You're right.
Yeah, Fabian Rangel Jr. is actually San Antonio guy.
And
Antonio.
Art by Daniel Bayless.
Okay. So Fabian Rangel Jr. did the script. Maybe?
Yeah, it looks like it.
So he's the guy who did the Black Mask comic Space Riders, which a lot of our fans, people seem to have really liked.
Yeah, yeah. I really, really liked this. I don't know if he is doing all of them. I think he may not be, but, you know, I'll check out the series. And anyway, I would recommend it for anybody who's like, any of that sounded interesting. It was one of my favorite little standalone issues of the whole year, honestly.
Yeah. All right, that about wraps up our comics for the week. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about some board games and movies and the return of cereal. Okay, so Dave, you played a game that I've been wanting to play, yep. So I'm curious to hear your take on it.
Yes, this is a game that was very different from what little I had read on it led me to believe it would be.
Okay.
The game is Above and Below. If you've seen it in the store or happen to have looked at it at all, it has this really cool kind of cartoony art style that reminded me a little bit of like sort of a Pixar look maybe to it. Had a kind of a fantasy element. It's sort of a you're building towns over this chasm in the earth that leads down to these sort of like creature inhabited dungeons. And I knew that there was a book that came with it in which you would read little story snippets, and it had this almost storytelling element to it. For when you go into the caves, and almost like, not quite choose your own adventure, but a little bit like that, like games like the Arabian Nights and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking it was going to be a storytelling game. Okay, it's not. It is, that is a very small side element of it. It is I guess what you would call a worker placement game, and feels more along the lines of a sort of serious gamer's game like Agricola to me.
Okay.
Now, I am not a deep gamer, so the Agricola people might be like, it's nowhere near the depth of that. But having played it, I feel it is in that ballpark, and I really enjoyed it. Essentially, the idea is that you were driven out of your town by barbarians or something like that, and this is a new settlement. And the players are all sort of rivaling to build the best settlement that they can.
Okay.
On your turn, you have characters who... you train as workers who build things for you. You have sort of a communal buying cards that are work a lot like deck building games, where you have like the I don't know what you call it traditionally, but you know how everybody sort of purchases.
You have the board, yeah.
Yeah, the board, and you are gearing up with to try and get the best stuff in it. And there's a lot of different strategies that emerge, just like Agricola. It's one of those ones where I was like, oh, you know, I realized on my turn there's kind of about three or four big things I can do. But I'm like, a few turns in, I'm like, oh, no way am I going to be able to get done all the stuff I want to get done.
Yeah.
But if I had planned smarter and you been more streamlined in what I chose to do, I could have gotten done better. That said, I feel like the first game, even one game in, I really, really liked it. One of those things you can do is to, it's almost like the wild card choice is okay. to go exploring in the dungeons. And in that case, you do get things where, like, your the other players will, like, read a paragraph to you, ask you what you want to, and it's like a little story paragraph, you know, and ask you what you want to do. Do you want to try to go into the enchanted pool? Do you want to follow that strange sound? You see a goblin running down the tunnel. Do you want to follow it? And then you might have to make a few, like, dice rolls to sort of accomplish some task. You may choose between things that are, well, that would be take a really lucky dice roll. There's a strong pressure luck mechanic to it, which I really enjoyed. It's super fun. You can buy cards. Like, I happen to explore a lot in the caves because I was just like, oh, it's the first time we're playing this. Let's try that.
Sure.
But then I found that there's buildings and things I could buy that took advantage of that and that gave me points at the end of the game. For doing that. Early on, you're trying to get... I'm trying to think. You know how in Dominion, gold is important early on and then land at the very end?
Mm-hmm.
This has a very similar mechanic to that. And anyway, I realized at the end that those caves that I had explored but wasn't able to make to build in earlier, that I could actually make use of empty caves by buying a certain card that I needed. It's a game that I would say combines elements of Dominion, Agricola, and weirdly Tales of the Arabian Nights because of that sort of randomized element. The characters are all very... The cards are beautifully illustrated. The characters look really kind of fun. It actually, as you read the little snippets from exploring the caves, a little bit of backstory does emerge. And I believe this is a specific setting, and I think the guy who designed the game is going to do more games in the setting, so you feel like it's a kind of a thought-out world.
Okay.
But that is sort of superfluous. At its heart is a fairly detailed worker placement game, and with mechanics I loved. I actually liked it more than Agricola when I played it, and I liked Agricola a lot. So I would heartily recommend it to the sort of more dedicated gamer sect.
Cool.
What else we got?
Nick, you've seen a movie that neither Dave nor I had heard of.
This is a Christmas movie in a lot of ways, but it is The Night Before.
Okay.
Which is Seth Rogen, Anthony Mackie, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
It's The Night Before Hanukkah? Okay. The Night Before Arbor Day?
Yes.
The Night Before...
Christmas.
Oh! That makes sense.
Yeah. Now, sort of the setup is that one year, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character's parents were killed, and his two best friends sort of consoled him, and they formed a tradition out of it. And basically, his friends have sort of, one is starting a family, which is Seth Rogen, and Anthony Mackie is a baseball player who's sort of hitting his highs as a, you know, the best season ever, so many fans.
Yep.
And they're sort of ending the tradition of getting together, and
it was just a hangout session, kind of a guy's night.
It was a sort of, yeah, it was let's go play the giant electronic keyboard in F.A.O. Schwartz.
This is the writer director from Warm Bodies.
Yes,
interesting. I like that movie.
And it's sort of, it's all about them trying to get to this giant party, which is the Nutcracker Ball, which is the secret. You only get it. Only certain people get invitations to it. And it's got great cameos by people like Michael Shannon.
Yeah, I just saw Michael Shannon's in it. Lizzie Kaplan's in it.
Miley Cyrus actually has a really fun cameo.
Alana Glazer.
Yeah, and
Tracy Morgan.
And, you know, like a lot of Joseph Gordon-Levitt films, like what's the one with, what's her, the girl from The New Girl? 500 Days of Summer. It's sort of dealing with relationship and life for all of them.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Seth Rogen is sort of trying to come to grips with having his first kid and sort of giving up sort of the drug-fueled past that he had.
Like Seth Rogen and drugs.
Yeah. And it does play to that. And there's some great comical scenes with him doing sort of every kind of drug imaginable and trying to stop those, like a bad acid trip by taking cocaine and doing other, eating
so
more
it
shrooms.
Sounds like it has some of the craziness of The Hangover, but probably more of a heart to it.
It does, actually. It does. It does have a heart of, you know, in the middle of all the swearing and
debauchery.
Drugs and debauchery that is involved. I thought it was really fun. I liked the message that it had, and I laughed like crazy.
Well, you've sold me. This is definitely going on my list of movies to watch.
It was fun. I mean, and it fit in with my theme of watching as many Christmas movies as I possibly can.
I have watched no Christmas movies yet this year. Really? I am right now. We're doing Star Wars watching with the kids.
It's really, I try to watch as many horror films as I can in October, but I feel like I'm watching more holiday films than I've ever watched before. So
I have not. I usually do a big watch of Elf and Scrooged and Christmas Vacation is my big trifecta.
I haven't watched Christmas Vacation, but I've watched a lot.
But I have not watched any because I've been mostly spending my time on Battlefront.
Well, that's true. I understand.
Yeah, same here.
You're on, like, level 40.
I am at level 43.
At my measly level 26.
Okay. So, also surprise coming back was Serial Season 2, the podcast.
Right. The most listened to podcast last year, yep. Which, for anybody who didn't by chance listen to it, was a super listenable to This American Lifestyle feature journalism exploring a murder in a high school in the late 90s.
Yeah.
And questions about whether the wrong person might be in prison. And so there was lots of interviews with them, lots of interviews with everybody around it. It was super compelling. Like, you just kind of, like, if you haven't listened to it, it may not sound, you know, and you're not like a true crime fan or something. I'm not.
Yeah.
It might not sound super interesting, but it was.
It was really
engaging.
Did it engaging.
Have a good I mean, I haven't listened to it. Did it have a resolution?
Of sorts, yes. I thought they ended pretty well.
Yes. Okay. I would say it had a very satisfying ending, even though it wasn't like, we blew the case wide open, and it wasn't quite like that.
Yeah, it actually continues on to the real world. For those who like Serial Season 1, there's a podcast called Undisclosed, which is further exploring the sort of the case being reopened, and it's the lawyer. It's one of the people running it is the lawyer for Adnan's case.
Right. Okay. I suppose the big thing in the first season was that there was, while the reporter herself remained somewhat conflicted on things, there had been enough poking around at that point to sort of get the case really reopened.
Yeah.
And some interesting possibilities had come to light as far as this is what might have occurred.
So one episode of season 2 is out?
Correct.
Yes. So season 2 just started up. It is the first episode is called Dust 1, which I thought was kind of interesting what it stands for. We'll get to that in a minute. This is the case of Bo Bergdahl, who famously was taken – he was captured by the Taliban. He was a military guy captured by the Taliban, held for about 5 years. They made a trade of some Taliban leaders to get him back.
Yep.
And there is some very strong controversy about this guy because – He was not taken off the base. He walked off the base and then was taken out in the wild.
Even his own story acknowledges this. It's just that his rationale behind it, according to him, is very much was altruistic in nature.
Yeah, and it's interesting to hear, I mean, Dave, you know, when it gets posted, a lot of people are like, oh, he's a traitor, he should be killed. And
I was, the first time I saw it, like, I think it was, like, reported on, I don't know, NPR or something like that, or maybe New York Times, I don't know, but I was looking at the comments. And all of the comments I was reading were like, there's no question, this guy's scum, he should be getting the death penalty.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I feel like the serial people, although his story does sound dodgy,
and
I felt like the serial guys would not have chosen this as their case if there was not something more interesting to look at.
So the deal here is that the writer of Black Hawk Down.
It's Hurt Locker.
Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty is working on a movie about Bo Bergdahl, and he did like a 25-hour conversation with him. And the serial people are using those tapes as the basis for their first episode.
Okay.
So it's a lot of Bo Bergdahl speaking of, you know, exactly what's happened. They also talk to members of his platoon and sort of, you know, give us the rundown of what happened. Here's what we know.
I mean, one of the interesting things in it, and by the way, great first episode.
It's a fantastic first episode.
Just a short, quick summary. Yeah. It's a great first episode.
Yeah.
But one of the interesting things is just finding out what life is like on a sort of, on a military base in, was it Afghanistan?
Yeah, it was Afghanistan.
Afghanistan, that's sort of like in the, basically the ass end of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's like a particularly crappy little.
It sounds pretty awful.
Base that nobody liked.
Yeah.
But then it's a question of like sort of what pushed him to leave is really at the heart of the story.
And Dust 1 is an acronym. It stands for Duty Station Whereabouts Unknown.
Right.
Which I thought was kind of cool. I don't want to give too much away, but they talked to him about, you know, why did you do this? What was your thought process? What happened? What went wrong?
Yeah.
And we get, as with the first episode or season of Serial, we get his version.
Right.
And then it closes off with this cliffhanger of, we're going to get another version that I was shocked we're going to get.
Yeah, it's crazy, and I don't quite want to say what.
No,
it is.
I don't either. But I can't wait for episode two.
There is he is not the sole talker in the episode. They talk to soldiers who have some who certainly have some doubts. And one of the interesting things I thought was just there was manpower and stuff expended to look into his disappearance.
Yeah,
and one of the very interesting parts of the show is just finding out what happened when they like looked around and they're like, he's supposed to be on guard duty. Where is he?
Yeah,
and they just have to like. This is a super scary thing to have happen to a military unit out in the like such a dangerous area to just literally have a guy disappear.
Yeah,
and also there was stuff I never knew about the story, like precautions he took.
Yeah,
that they talk about things like he sent back some of his stuff to the States
because so the military wouldn't get their hands on it.
He seemed to think that there was a good chance that he was going to be like sent to a military.
He's
going to
be disciplined for it. Yeah,
yeah, and it's like he didn't want his stuff he owned confiscated. So it's like he clearly did have some sort of plan.
It was somewhat premeditated at least, yeah.
Yeah,
it's interesting, and we're just early on. Yeah. This point is Serial, we didn't know much either, and I'm really excited. Serial, by the way, is it comes out on Thursdays, so the second episode should hit this Thursday.
For those who do feel he's a traitor, by the way, and should be strung up or whatever, I will say his story, like, does have a strong dodgy element to it.
Yeah, it sounds like he may have come to it after 5 years of thinking about it and have some lawyer coaching.
Like, there's parts that sound plausible, there's parts that sound very unplausible.
Yeah.
But they seem like they will be wanting to explore that, and it is not just a, we believe you, Bo Bergdahl, tell us more. It's
absolutely
not the tone.
No, Serial is coming out the same way they came at season one. It was they were not assuming that Adnan was innocent.
Correct.
They were just saying, hey, maybe he's not as guilty as he seems.
Right.
And they're trying to get both sides.
This is probably an interesting story to be told.
Yeah, and I think that's all that's going on here. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a great second season start.
How long do seasons usually run?
I don't remember.
Wasn't it like 8 or 10 episodes?
Yeah, something like that. Not super long.
So not super long.
And they're
long.
Roughly an hour long each.
Yeah.
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 I'd forgotten how good it is. Who's the lead journalist? What's her name?
Sarah.
Oh, man,
I blanked.
Okay, but anyway, she's great. She does a really good job. It has all of the best production of This American Life pointed at it, and I feel like even though it sort of meanders about, in a weird way, I feel like there's no wasted moment. There's no moment when I wasn't like, what's next? What's next?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very excited to have it back. And
ready for episode two after the cliffhanger of episode one.
All right. Sarah Koenig, by the way.
Ah, there we go.
I believe that is about wraps it up for this week. We'll be back next week before our before Christmas.
Yep.
And until that time,
Yo
Joe and Mask and Transformers and Visionaries and Rom. And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.